Welcome to our lecture only chapter on real estate and other investments. This is a chapter that was taken out of the newer book, the cheaper, smaller book, and I believe that it's pretty important information for someone who's looking at the major investment alternatives in an introductory financial planning class such as ours. So I've inserted it back in. We are not going to do any calculations. Well, we'll do, we will together, but there are not going to be any assignments to do, anything on the exam. But this is pretty important stuff, folks, so bear with me. And I have my little tagline here on slide number one, because not everybody wants to own just mutual funds. The vast majority of us working grunts, mutual funds make a whole lot of sense, as we spent a lot of time on them just previously, especially because of 401ks, 403bs, and the like, and you've heard all this before. But there are other alternatives, folks, and you should at least be aware of them. You probably won't get involved with them, and some of them I hope you don't get involved with, unless you know exactly what you're doing or willing to lose a lot of money or both. But especially real estate, folks. We can't ignore real estate. It's a very important alternative for investors. So let's get started on slide number two. For the vast majority of us, our home will be our real estate investment. It's a direct investment. What does that mean? Well, that means our name is on the title. It is public information that is down at the county courthouse or the county admin building, in our case, San Diego, the county admin building. Although some people try to hide that through trusts and other entities, but ultimately the government wants to know who owns what, and so there is a way for them to trace back. And as we discussed in Chapter 7, your home, your principal residence, is the major asset of most American households, has very good tax advantages, and is a very good, normally very good hedge against inflation. Because in general, a home produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5%, 3% a year. Which is not bad. You know, it's about the same as bonds, but some areas, such as San Diego, have done a whole lot better. But in my humble opinion, as we said back in Chapter 7, it's a home first and investment second. You're going to hear other alternative opinions, most notably from real estate agents and people in the real estate industry, saying that, no, you should think of your house as a great investment. And yeah, they have a point, but I'm right. Slide number three. What are some of the other examples of other direct real estate investments? Vacation homes. And you have to, if you're going to use this as an investment, you better bone up on when the IRS views it as a rental property, when it views it as a vacation home, because there are two different situations. Rental property is a whole course unto itself, and we'll spend a little bit of time just giving you some thumbnail, because this is, you know, our thumbnail look at the investment alternatives. But you can spend an entire lifetime on rental property, just as you can spend an entire lifetime learning about which stocks to invest in, or yeah. So some people, it becomes a career, and it's a big industry, folks. the real estate industry is a big industry, so maybe you want to get involved. Now, the biggest gains, the largest gains come from undeveloped land and developing it. But folks, stay away from this. Don't get lured into any kind of what you think is going to be a get-rich-quick scheme. All the money is riding on a single parcel of land. There's no cash flow, but you still have to pay the property taxes. and there's no guarantee that you'll be able to develop the land anytime soon through zoning or financing. So there are enormous risks. This is not for somebody to do their first investment property. I'm talking about people who look out in Borrego and there's this 20 acres for, you know, dirt cheap, or maybe it's a tax lien. You buy it from the county because nobody has paid the taxes on it for 7 years, and then you turn around and realize that you can't do anything with this land. If you are interested, you really need to get into the industry. Get into the industry and learn the ropes and work your way up through a real estate firm. There's a saying in the industry, never invest in dirt. Exactly. It's not for the amateurs. It's no way to get started, folks. But who knows? There's always exceptions. Slide number 4. There are other types of investments which we call indirect investments, where your name, your individual name, is not on the title. Some other entity is investing on your behalf. Yeah. What's going on here? Well, you might have heard of real estate syndicates, real estate partnerships, limited partnerships. You are normally one of the limited liabilities, or just limited liability partners, or just limited partners. You don't have any real say over what's going on. The general partner or general partners are the ones who are controlling the investment. And you know, these things sometimes are sold like stocks and sometimes not. You better get a good referral, folks. Because sometimes they're hard to get out of. But, you know, it's a great way to invest in real estate and not have to be a landlord. I think a better way to do that is through what are called real estate investment trusts, REITs. And we quickly mentioned those when we talked about mutual funds, because there are mutual funds that invest in REITs. REITs are similar to mutual funds, but instead of holding stocks and bonds and other financial securities, other financial investments, they hold real estate. For example, the shopping center that the Vons is in, or the mall that the Nordstrom's and JCPenney's and Macy's are in. JCPenney's and Walmart and Home Depot, they don't own those properties. Sometimes they do, but mostly what they do is they enter into 50-year leases with real estate investment trusts. And the real estate investment trust's job is to run the shopping center, run the mall, run the apartments. And they have to keep the upgrading and maintenance. They have to make sure that all the smaller storefronts and the ancillary auxiliary properties are rented out. Make sense? And these are actually not bad investments. Sometimes they are required, like mutual funds, to pay out what they bring in, or 90-95% of what they bring in. So the rent and any capital gains, they have to distribute that, just like a mutual fund, to the shareholders. So they're not bad. They're a great way to invest in real estate without having to worry about being a landlord. Now, equity sharing is something that we discussed back in Chapter 7. You put up the down payment for someone else, and then you share in the appreciation. This is often done within a family, the grandparents, the parents, and the younger folks just getting started. But it doesn't have to be. However you do it, within family or without family, make sure you have a good lawyer write up everything, because it can get tricky, right? Yeah, you don't want to lose your investment because somebody goes through foreclosure. And then for people who are very well off in terms of income, they have a lot of income, they need shelters, there is low-income housing, which at first is primarily a tax deduction, a tax credit, but eventually it will become a real estate investment. But these, you know, except for the REITs, for the most part, folks, I don't think are for the vast majority of us working grunts. So you decide. Now, what about on slide 5, commercial property? San Diego folks, forget it. It's, you think housing is expensive, residential property? You don't know what you're talking about until you enter the bizarre, insane world of commercial property in San Diego. Most people are going to start with a small apartment building or a duplex, but hotels, office buildings, stores, yeah, you can't believe the prices. Back in the 90s, a friend of mine was trying to get friends of his and get together and buy this little hotel in OB that's now become an international hostel. And it was run down and it needed a ton of work, but I forget the price. It was like $470,000. At the height of the bubble, you couldn't touch that thing for under $2 or $3 million now. So whoever bought it, it wasn't us, did pretty well for themselves. But it's such a headache, right? The advice is look for income to be greater than expenses. Yeah, right, guys. Don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow for several years here in San Diego. The rule of thumb is 7 to 10 times rent. You know, if you can buy something that's throwing off, you know, $30,000 worth of rent a year, you should pay about, you know, $250,000, $300,000. Ah! Are they out of their mind? San Diego? No, 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 no. And if you are so inclined, I think the South Bay is where the bargains are. Back after the Great Recession hit us like a ton of bricks in 2010, 11, 12, you could find places that were selling for 7 to 10 times rent in San Diego. But right now, no, it's going to be very difficult. And you're up against some of the best real estate investors in the world, so good luck. Slide number 6. How about fixer-uppers? Again, San Diego, yeesh. It's tough, folks. I won't kid you. It's tough because you're up against very good real estate investors. Concentrate on smaller properties first, in my humble opinion. How about a duplex, right? Live in one of them, fix up the others. Look for low down payments and seller financing of rundown properties because normally banks don't want to loan to distressed properties. So if it's somebody who's ready to cash out, they're elderly, and they have a property that they've been milking for decades and they haven't really done much with it, they might have a hard time finding a buyer for whom the bank will lend them. So you go to the seller and say, look, you know, look at my credit score. I'm great, good. I'll pay you. I'll pay you as if you were the bank. Plus, you know, if the bank is the one that owns the property because it's a foreclosure and it's run down, they're usually happy to finance that because they're not in the real estate business. They're in the money lending business, so they don't want that property on their books. Right? That's what happened in the Great Recession. They had thousands, tens of thousands of properties that they were trying to get rid of. My humble opinion, dear students, is stay away from property managers. Nobody cares about your property as much as you do, but there are always exceptions. I recommend to people who are thinking about buying real estate, get a job as a property manager. Learn the ropes about how to deal with properties and tenants. And then, I enjoy this. I could do this for myself. For what it's worth. Slide number 7. Because, remember we talked about the PETA factor in mutual funds?
Yeah. Pain in the... Right, right. Well, with real estate, the PETA factor is sky high.
I have a renewed appreciation for stocks, bonds, mutual funds after becoming a landlord. Are you savvy dealing with repairs? Can you do drywall, plumbing, framing, electricity? Careful. And are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important, if not more so, than fixing a toilet. One bad tenant can set you back thousands of dollars, and don't you just want to just squeeze their necks until their eyes pop out, and yet you have to do everything legally, call the lawyer. You can't call Guido and Luigi to go over there and break their kneecaps to get out of the... No, it doesn't work that way. Make improvements that add perceived value. This guy, J.D. Seaman, he's written a few books, but... Look, folks, I am not very good at fixing things. That's why we have Enrique and Mario and Rolf and Jason. help! We pay them well because we want them to do a good job. But this guy is one of those people who can fix things. He's good with his hands. And he says, install a picket fence. Let people love a picket fence. I don't know. He's the one who, when the house was settling, which is, you know, a common occurrence. It's not the end of the world unless it, you know, settles a lot. But if the foundation starts to settle, when he replaced the windows and doors, he tilted them away from the slant. So now the house looks straight up and down. That's nothing new. Look at the Leaning Tower of Pisa. The Italian engineers tilted the top of the tower because as soon as they started building it, it started to lean on its side. Yeah. So, right. San Diego, get involved, but realize that, you know, there's a lot of good in real estate investors out there who are good at fixer-uppers. Other parts of the country, it's much easier. Slide 8. So let's recap with the advantages of real estate and the disadvantages. Because as I hope you understand now, no investment alternative is perfect. Every investment alternative has advantages and has disadvantages. And you should know this before you invest, right? You should understand these before you get in. A lot of people don't. Many people don't. Real estate is a great hedge against inflation. Over the years, real estate has done well against inflation. Financial leverage is another one of the investment advantages of real estate. You get to use other people's money to make your money. That's the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes that allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. And we'll take a look at this with some examples in just a bit. It's very powerful, but it has its... Exactly. It's one of those things that if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And if you live by financial leverage, you can die by financial leverage. For the partnerships, for the REITs, there's usually easy entry, limited financial liability as the limited partner or REIT, and you don't have to deal with management concerns. And one of the cool things about real estate investments, in my humble opinion, is that they're not like stocks. You know, they don't go up and down every day. You don't check it on the, well, now you can. Right now you can check your stocks on the internet, but even then they change it. I think Zillow and Trulia change their prices, their estimates every month, not every day, every minute. You hear people talk about, oh, I'm in it for the long term with my stocks, and then every 10 minutes they're running to the PC or they're looking on their cell phone to see what the stock has gone up or down. It's gone up 25 cents, yeah, it's going down 30 cents, what do I do? Turn the cell phone off. Slide 9, now what are the disadvantages? Yes, as we said, every investment alternative has disadvantages, and the big one with real estate is liquidity. They just are not liquid investments. Stocks, mutual funds, you just call up your broker, go online, boom, they're gone. You get your cash. But with real estate, it might take 3, 6, 9 months to sell a property. Or if it's a partnership, it might be hard for you to get out. Get to find somebody to buy yours. This is not a problem with the real estate investment trust, by the way, because they look like stocks. You buy and sell them like a stock. Diversification is a problem with real estate because usually all your money's tied up in that one rental unit that you've purchased and are fixing up. Not a problem with partnerships and REITs. If it's a syndicate, which have, you know, they're still around, but they're not as popular anymore because of the tax changes way back in the 1980s, you have to worry about passive versus active income. And we won't get into that, folks, because it's a whole world into itself. But it takes a while for you to write off your losses if the losses cannot be go against your active income, which is what you make for your job or from other types of income. So it's a bit of a nightstick that they used to beat down these syndicates back in the 80s. And then dealing with management and tenant problems and the PETA factor, sky high, folks. You want to hear some stories, you just call me. I'm sure you'd call any person who's gotten involved in the wonderful world of real estate. And then property values can decline, folks. I don't care what anybody says. Some people during the great bubble of housing in the 2000s were saying, oh, real estate's never declined in San Diego. I said, what are you talking about? Sure it has. Sheesh. So you heard people actually more than a few years ago, say, come on, Piano, admit it. Real estate's the perfect investment. Because I was trying to get people to realize, you know, it's not going to continue, this run-up. And they thought, you're out of your mind. It goes up 10% every year no matter what, sometimes 20, 30%. Okay, whatever you say. But heed the words of Andrew Tobias, beware the permanent trend. It's what we call an oxymoron, permanent trend. It's like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence or straight curve. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 and sold in 94. See, I couldn't convince people. It was only 10, 12, 13 years before that real estate had gone through a bubble, not as bad as 2000s, in the late 80s, and then fell back in 91, 92, 93. And then ask those who bought in 2006 and went through foreclosure. Look, real estate seems to be finally back on its feet again. And in my humble opinion, if you plan to hold for the long term, you should do well. But, what do we say? Yeah, the management assumes no responsibility. There are no guarantees. It has often been said that real estate has created more millionaires in the United States than any other investment alternative. I don't know if it's true or not, but it certainly has been good to many people. And so, it's one investment alternative that you should consider. And by the way, in case you haven't figured this out yet, there is no perfect investment. You know, back in the late 1990s, internet stocks, full speed ahead, folks. It's blue skies, productivity gains. We are going to change the world. And we did, you know, we did. But in the meantime, a lot of those internet stocks are gone. Those companies are just their history, so keep your eyes open. Slide number 11. What about leverage? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, I already told you about that. Wait, isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes and no. Yeah, leverage is a tool that can be used very effectively, but like any tool, like a buzzsaw, you can cut your fingers off. Let's look at the two problems in that older book that I mentioned that illustrate the power of leverage. So here are financial planning problems 1 and 2. Slide number 12. Calculating the return on investment. Dave. And so I usually throw in my funny names. I kept copying it verbatim. Dave. You know, good old Dave. Dave. Dave bought a rental property for $200,000 cash. Now, there's the first kicker. How many people buy $200,000 cash? There are a few. In fact, during the Great Recession, the aftermath of the Great Recession, many investment firms, hedge funds, and private equity companies were buying properties for cash because the banks were just so overloaded they didn't have time to deal with it. So give me the cash, get away. He then, 1 year later, sold it for $240,000. What? That's a pretty big jump. Well, that's what was happening in 2004, 5, 6. What was the return on his $200,000 investment? Well, let's see. we take the $240,000 selling price minus the initial price, the initial amount that Dave came up with, and that's $40,000. Right? So $40,000 divided by the total return, divided by his initial investment of $200,000, is a 20% return. Well, that's what was going on. Real estate was going up 20%. And so it took him $200,000 to make $40,000. Are you with me? You with me? Okay, now, how was it really going down? What was going on is that people were not putting up the whole $200,000. They were just putting up $20,000 or $30,000. You know, 10, 15, maybe 20%. Because it was very easy money, folks. If you were breathing, that was a good start. If you could fog a mirror, as the saying goes. So he only put $20,000. He borrowed $180,000. What's his return on investment? Well, it's staggering. You see, the absolute dollar return is still $40,000. But in this case, his initial investment is only $20,000. So you take the $40,000 divided by $20,000 and you get 200%. It only costs us $20,000 to make $40,000. And this is what people were doing. They were buying a property for, some of these properties weren't even built yet, these condo projects. And then 9 months, a year later, they were selling it for 20% more than what they had paid for it, but they never really paid that much. They never even actually owned the property. And so they came up with $20,000, $30,000 and walked away with $60,000, $70,000 or $80,000. So you see why everybody's eyes lit up, and we all got enamored with the world of real estate, and people were leaving their jobs as the cashier down at the grocery store and becoming a real estate agent. Quick rundown, they're giving away free money. What are you waiting for? Well, to me, it's like musical chairs, folks. As long as the music's playing, everybody happy, but then when the music stops, you better be sitting down in a chair because you're going to get squashed. And that's exactly what happened. Slide number 13. Let's do problem number 66. I don't know. It wasn't in the book. I just named it that as a joke, folks. Don't get angry at me. That's the number of days that after the guy who wrote Revelations, he's the same guy who wrote the book, the Gospel of John, he has said that, you know, that's how long the Roman Empire has, 666 days, the mark of the beast was Rome, and he was only about 300 years off. But anyway, calculating the return on investment using financial leverage, and things don't go as planned. Suppose Dave invested only $20,000 of his own money and borrowed $180,000, and the property value went down 20%, which, as we saw in Chapter 7, some went down 40, 50, 60%. Now the question is, what's he going to tell his wife? what just happened? He put down, let's look at the drop first. The drop is 200,000 times 20% drop means the property has lost 40,000. The property is now only worth 160,000, but he still owes 180,000. He is underwater. He has negative equity. And so now, if he tries to sell the property for $160,000, the bank's going to go, uh-oh, we want $180,000. So what does he do? And the first thing he does is goes up to his wife and says, honey, we have a problem. He asks the bank if they will allow a short sale. Will you take $160,000? And during the financial turmoil, the bank said, yeah, okay. Or he drops off the keys at the at the bank and says, I'm sorry, I can't make the payments anymore, because maybe he got one of those option arms. And the bank is now stuck with the property. Or what some people did, and this just drives me up a wall, and if I were the renter, I would want to kill the guy if I could find him, or at least break his kneecaps. he just stops making the payments and lets the renters continue to pay him the monthly rent. Horrible, horrible. And thousands, tens of thousands of renters would get letters, were getting letters from the bank saying, we now own the property, we're going to give you 30, 60 days to get out. By the way, here's a check for $3,000. No hard feelings. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a violent man, folks, so don't take me at my word. I'm not going to call Guido and Luigi and the joke, the Italian jokes. My wife loves me to tell. I'll tell you one. Why it is that we Italians know the difference between a friend and a good friend. Huh? Do you know the difference between a friend and a good friend? Well, let me tell you. A friend will help you move, but a good friend will help you move a body. Yeah, I know. I'm from Philadelphia. Everybody in Philadelphia has a good friend. I digress. Slide number 14, real estate and IRAs. Now, we really should go through these next four slides very quickly because what I'm going to try to convince you to do is not to ever put real estate in an IRA or other tax-qualified account. You can do it. It is legal. But there are strict, complicated rules, and there are huge penalties if you screw up, which is very easy to do because the rules are very strange. You need to find a reputable, experienced trustee who knows how to do these things and will not let you accidentally write a check for something that you're not allowed to write a check for. It has to come out of the IRA. Don't do it, folks. It's funny. It can't be your home or your business, nor can it be your parents' or your child's home, but it can be your brother's or sister's. Figure that one out. You must have sufficient cash in the account to perform necessary transactions. If not, you must either sell the property or deposit more cash into the IRA. But if you go over the annual maximum contribution level, then you will be penalized 6% per year on the amount over-deposited until there is sufficient cash in the IRA and you were able to withdraw the amount that you over-deposited. Did you understand what I just said? If not, don't do it. For this reason, people often pool their IRAs, which is normally forbidden. Now, wait a minute. You're not supposed to pool an IRA. It's an individual retirement arrangement account. Everyone calls it an individual retirement account, but it's actually called an individual retirement arrangement. But these people are telling me that I need to pool the IRA, but if you don't, you better find a reputable, experienced trustee who knows how to pool IRAs, which is normally forbidden. And slide 16, the advantages of a real estate and IRA can be very dubious. Investment real estate often has many of the same advantages as an IRA without any of the constraints. Capital gains are deferred until you sell the property, which may not be until retirement. Income is usually negative or minimal for years. Sometimes not, but often we are looking at negative cash flow. So why do you need that in an IRA? Real estate often gets many tax deductions, which you won't get if it's inside an IRA. And capital gains on real estate can currently be eliminated if you simply live in the property for 2 years before you sell it. It has to be your principal residence. More about that later. Up to $250,000 of capital gains for a single person, $500,000 for married. Or the advantages can be compelling. For example, if you were able to put a real estate investment in a Roth IRA, which can be done, you have to find somebody who knows what they're doing, then any capital gains, any rental income will be tax-free in retirement. That's pretty amazing, folks. Tax-free rent coming from a property in perpetuity. Plus, as we said, you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet, which you can do with your mutual funds and stocks. Slide number 18. Wait a minute, Piano. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Well, slow down. Currently, as the law now stands, as long as the real estate is your primary residence for two out of the last 5 years, then you pay no capital gains tax on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. But there are subtleties that you must understand. The first one is that it must be your principal residence. Be careful. If you own two or more properties and you frequent each regularly, the IRS can rule that none of your properties is your principal residence. Very celebrated case of a wealthy couple. Don't be too, you know, sad for them. But hey, they got hit hard. They had a house in Wisconsin, one in Arizona, and one in Florida, and they moved around between the three often. And when they sold one, they said it's our principal residence. The IRS said no, it's not. Then the IRS won in court. So hey, be careful. And oh, by the way, if you lose money on your primary residence, that is not tax deductible. The IRS believes that it's a home first and investment second. Slide number 19. Okay, fine. All right, we'll talk about it. When we started investing, I know some of you was, all right, great, we're going to talk about gold. Oh, gold. Gold. Folks, gold is an awful investment. I know, you don't believe me. It is. Does it pay rent? Does it pay dividends? Interest? Does it find new markets? Does it create new products? Does it grow with the economy? No, it sits there. It's beautiful. The coins are gorgeous. The bars, the wafers. What are you going to do with it? Where are you going to hide it? Yeah, don't bury it in your backyard. Don't put it in the safety deposit box. Because if you believe the world economy is going to fall apart soon, you should buy plenty of gold and silver. But don't put it in the safety deposit box because you won't be able to get inside the bank. I like Tom Petruno. He doesn't work for the LA Times anymore, but boy, I wish he would because I just always liked his down-to-earth, realistic viewpoint. If your reason for owning gold has something to do with the end of the world as we know it, shotguns and canned foods probably would be a more practical investment. You talk to these people who believe in this survivalist, and they're so unrealistic. I got plenty of food and water and 4,000 rounds of ammunition. Great. There's 250,000 people scouring for food in your neighborhood. How many of them are you going to shoot? 4,000? Now you've got still another 246,000 people coming, and you've got all these bodies you have to deal with. You've got an environmental disaster. They don't realize that if technologically based civilization cracks, falls, and dissolves, you better be out of the Northern Hemisphere, folks. You better be somewhere in Tierra del Fuego or Tasmania and have learned to raise goats and chickens and grow your own food and eat the bit that you believe is not poisonous. Exactly. Now, what about exchange-traded mutual funds? You don't have to worry about where to store the gold, but you do have to worry about fraud because there was one, it wasn't an ETF, but it was one group that bought a bunch of lead, painted gold, or had gold outside or something like that. Now, what about silver? Oh, by the way, what is gold used for? What is it good for? It's an excellent conductor of electricity, but we have others. We have others that are just almost as good. In fact, most cell phones have a tiny bit of gold. Tiny bit of gold. It's great for your teeth, folks. The dentists still swear that it's the best stuff to put in your teeth. But other than that, jewelry, that's it. And put stock in it away, thinking it's going to be worth more someday, and it maybe, probably will be, but hang on a minute. It doesn't return a very good return on investment. Now, silver. Silver is a metal that actually does have many uses that are still, industrial uses that are still used. But one of the biggest ones is gone, and that's film. Silver was used extensively in film, and nobody uses film anymore. These next three, platinum, palladium, and rhodium, are quite interesting. Platinum is more expensive than gold. But these things are very useful in certain industrial applications, one of which you use if you own a car that is not older than 40, 50 years old, and that's the catalytic converter. In your catalytic converter are these very interesting elements that are able to burn those hydrocarbons that did not get burned in your engine, cleaning the air. And we have Governor Jerry Brown to thank for that, because back in the late 60s, 70s, Los Angeles was gone. It was hidden under a blanket of smog, much like Beijing and Shanghai are now, even about 40, 50 years behind us. And Governor Brown went to Detroit and said, look, guys, you know, we got to do something about this. We got to do something about this. And that's how amazing we are, folks. We came up with catalytic converters, and now in L.A. you can see more than a quarter a mile away. Sometimes you don't want to. Okay, San Diegans love the jab at L.A. I apologize to you folks who love L.A. And I do, but I like it 100 miles away from me. Thank you very much. So now you're thinking, come on, Piano, aren't there people who have made a lot of money in gold? Well, and silver and platinum, palladium? No, they're not. They really aren't. If you look on slide 20, you see the difference between 1801, you know, 200 years of stocks, bonds, treasury bills, which are short-term securities like a savings account, and then gold in the consumer price index. And when people say, I want to invest in gold, what stocks are so intangible, you know, hang on a minute, I'll show them this slide, and if they go, oh, I still want to invest in gold, great, go ahead. Because when does gold do well? Gold does well when the world is about to end. Civil War. Exactly. 1930s, 40s, Depression, and the World War II. And then with the advent of inflation in 1970s and 80s, gold skyrocketed because people thought the world was going to end. They literally did. I don't even believe me, but in the early 80s, you know, people were really frightened. The 70s were a very difficult time for the economy and for the world. And so I remember the lines around the block when gold hit $100 an ounce in 1981, and then promptly fell to 200, well, not prompt, took 20 years, but then promptly started a decline that brought it down to $250 in 2000, 1999. And then the world was going to end when we invaded Iraq and 9/11 and all these other things, and gold did really well up until about 2012 or so, 13, and it's fallen back quite a bit. So with gold, you have to not take a long-term perspective. You must take a short-term. You must be a trader, a speculator, because there are times when gold skyrockets, when people believe that the world is going to end, and then there are times when gold falls precipitously when people realize that, no, it's not going to end anytime soon. Maybe tomorrow, the meteorite, Ebola, tsunami, who knows. But, no, you know, the probability is that we're going to muddle through as we've done for the last 200 and some odd years in the United States. And stocks should continue to do well if the world doesn't end. And no, look at that. I mean, I wanted to invest in that. Go right ahead, buy gold coins. They're beautiful. They're heavy. They're, you know. Slide number 21. How about jewels, precious stones, gems, diamonds, sapphires, rubies, and emeralds? Forget it. In the face-to-face class, we show a little video that's quite enlightening. It shows that humans can make diamonds, because diamonds are made out of carbon, and so you take a little bit of carbon, you heat it to, 10,000 degrees, and you create millions of pounds per square inch of pressure, which is how diamonds were made in volcanic eruptions, and you wind up with a diamond. So there ain't nothing scarce, there ain't nothing treasured about precious gems, folks. De Beers wants you to believe that. Diamonds are a girl's best friend, but they're not an investor's best friend. But there is an interesting business that is developing. Because diamonds are made out of carbon, you can take Fluffy or Fido, who has met their great reward, have them cremated, send in the ashes, and they will send you back a diamond made out of Fluffy or Fido. And eventually, I don't know if it's there yet, but you'll be sending Uncle Lucas, you know, remains, or Aunt, you know, Mary, and they'll send you back your aunt or your uncle or your loved one in a diamond. You can't make this stuff up, folks. You just can't make it up. All right, slide number 22. Here's another alternative that may appeal to you, but for the vast majority of us, folks, forget about them. Rare coins, works of arts, antiques, stamps, books, sports memorabilia, cars, rugs, Chinese ceramics, paintings, collectibles. Look, there are some people who can do well with these things, but think of it as a hobby first. You must enjoy it first, because it can be a financial disaster. You bought that painting that you think is a Dalí, only to be told that there have been dozens and dozens of imitation Dalís on the market lately, and you paid $17,000 for it, and it's hanging in your wall, and the kids come in and start throwing ketchup around. Or heed the warning of the Al Cajon Barbie guy, who said he had $50,000 worth of Barbie dolls in a self-storage location, and one weekend they all disappeared. Well, I don't know if they were really worth $50,000, and who knows that he really had them or not, but still, you know, think about it, folks. Know the dealer's reputation, because there are tremendous scams out there, and do your research. Better yet, listen to Mr. Christopher Berghay, who runs Christie's Auction, or used to. Don't buy art as an investment. Buy art because of what it speaks to you, how it changes you, how it makes you feel, how it makes you think. I've bought a few pieces, and actually a couple of them have actually done pretty well last time I checked. But the one I thought that I didn't buy, I thought that was going to do really, really well, was after John Lennon passed away. His art all of a sudden was flooded on the market, and I thought, you know, this probably stuff's going to be worth a lot of money. And I looked at the one piece that I really liked, and it was $1,800, and this was back in 1982, and I'm old. And I thought, I don't know, I'm not sure if I'm going to stick around in here. I don't want to be carting this thing. I don't want to put it in storage. So I didn't buy it. And oh my goodness, am I glad I didn't buy it, because I just saw about a couple years ago the same, not that piece, but from the pieces from that one art show that were, I saw for half the price that what they were asking for them back in the 80s. Now, if I had bought his guitar, that would have been, see, you don't know. You know, his guitar and other, the music memorabilia that's associated with the Beatles has skyrocketed. So, there you go. You don't know. Do it because you enjoy it. And who knows? You might do really well. One of my students was still is, I assume, a comic book collector. And he tells me, you know, he's done okay. His portfolio of comic books is worth a, you know, goodly amount. And he brings him joy. But he picked up the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And they come up with new comics every month, folks. And most of them just disappear after 3 months and they never be heard from again. So you want to get one that becomes very popular. And he picked it up and he looked at it and he thought, no. And he didn't buy it. And if he had, right, it'd be worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, but oh well. Slide 23. The maximum capital gains taxes on most all financial and real estate investments is about 15%. The capital gains, except if you're unless you make over $450,000, and it goes up to 20, but still, the capital gains taxes on precious metals is 28%. Plus, in general, they're not allowed into an IRA. There is a way to get gold coins. They have to be United States Golden Eagles in your IRA. So you think the Congress is trying to tell you something? Yeah, stick with the major investment alternatives and stay away from these things unless they bring you joy.
Oh, slide number 24. It's time to finally acknowledge the elephant in the living room. Cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, and the other 1,500 to 2,000 different cryptocurrencies that have sprung up. I was told there's even a Jesus coin, if you can believe that. Well, what's going on with these things? Well, there's a lot of hype, folks, and a lot of outrageous claims. But in reality, folks, these things are pure speculation. They're very similar to gold and precious metals, but even worse because there's no practical application or usage. However, the technology behind cryptocurrencies, the blockchain technology, as it is called, another name for it is a digital ledger, is actually very valuable, and that will survive. And I think Stephen Colbert, of all people, said it best. It's gold for nerds. He's right. It's very similar to gold, other than the fact that gold actually does have some usages for your teeth, as we said, and for jewelry and for some electronics. Cryptocurrencies have no usage whatsoever, other than the fact that people believe that they're worth something, and that makes them worth something. So, again, pure speculation. Ah, come on, Payano, what you got against Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies? You're just old, that's all. This is the future, and we's all going to get rich. I mean, this is what you hear people saying. It's going to go to 500,000, a million. It's going to be worth $40 trillion of market capitalization. You know, it might. You never know, but I don't think so. Slide number 25. Let's take a look at my rebuttal in a more conversational tone, because I'm just doing my best to look at it and describe it from what I see, because I'm not alone. There are other people who believe that it's nothing more than tulip bulb mania all over again. But there are others who are saying, no, you don't understand. This is the future. This is the way it's going to happen. And when you try to rebut them, this is what happens. This is often the conversation. Slide 25. First of all, as mentioned, you can't invest in a cryptocurrency. You can only speculate. The value is worth only what others believe it is worth. Cryptocurrencies do not pay interest. They do not pay dividends or rent. They don't create new markets. They don't do research and development and create new products. They're just a digital piece of information. There's no cash flow. There's no value. And more importantly, there's nothing backing up the currency. And this is where people just go for the jugular. This is where they say, what about all the fiat currencies? They say it as if it means it's a nasty word, a fiat currency. Huh? Aren't they all the same? They are only worth something because we all believe that they are. Not so fast, okay? Because you really don't understand what currency is all about if you say things like that. You don't understand what a national currency is if you say that it's not backed up by anything. So they want it to be backed up by gold before there was Bitcoin. Now they want it to be backed up by Bitcoin, which is more worthless than gold. Slide 26. You will hear people say that our dollars and other fiat currencies are not backed by gold or anything else and are therefore worthless. And this is pure poppycock, which allows you to spit on your friends. Poppycock. By the way, what's gold worth? As we saw, gold also as an investment is really a speculation. It's not really an investment. Our dollars are backed by our economy, the great American economic machine. Our dollars are backed by what the United States can produce and consume, our gross domestic product. And I know that's hard to get your
hand their arms around and understand what we're talking about, but it's very simple. Walk into any grocery store and look around, and then you tell me that your dollars are worthless, okay? And if you still believe that, here's a bag, go take it to the bank, put all those worthless dollars into the bag and give them to me, and I'll take them off your hands, because obviously if they're worthless, you don't want them lying around, right? It's trash. I'll take your trash off your hand, and you can thank me for right. Ha ha ha. Slide 27. The job of the Federal Reserve Bank is to make sure that there are enough dollars in circulation to match the production of our economy with the consumption of our economy. Too many dollars, you get inflation. Too few dollars, and our economic output is stifled, and the opportunities for growth of our wealth are lost. And folks, it's not an easy job. They often will screw up royally. You go back in time and you say, you know, Fed, you shouldn't have tightened here, you shouldn't have loosened here. You did it at the worst time. And sometimes they get it right, and then sometimes they screw up royally. But I'd like to see you do a better job, right? I love it because you're looking at the past. It's easy when you're looking at the past because they weren't looking at the past. They were looking at the future, and it's impossible to look at the future. You're basically driving forward by looking in the rearview mirror. And I love it when I hear people scream, "End the Fed! Get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank! They're crooks! They're banksters!" Yeah, you know it's not perfect, but I'd like to see you do a better job. And what would you replace it with? Somebody has to control the currency. And they come up with these cockamamie schemes to back our currency with gold. Folks, no country on earth backs their currency with gold anymore. Think about it. Why? What does gold, the amount of gold, which is, there's not that much of it, folks, have to do with what the ability of your economy to produce and consume goods and services? There's no connection between gold and our ability to produce these things. And so what these people say, there has to be. We have to make an artificial connection so that it's worth something. And that's just, it's pure insanity. It's absolute worthless. It doesn't make any sense. It's false logic. It's just false. There's nothing there. Slide 28. So how does this relate to cryptocurrencies? And how do you explain the success of Bitcoin? Well, there is absolutely nothing to stop other individuals or groups from starting their own cryptocurrencies, right? And this is exactly what has happened. The last I heard, there were 1,500, then I heard 2,000, and I'm not going to go out and try to count them all. But it's tulip bulb mania all over again. Eventually, the bottom is going to fall out. And it seems to have with many of these currencies. And it fell out with Bitcoin, but maybe it's coming back. And some people will get very, very rich and already have rich, and many more others will lose a whole lot of money. If you were to put a gun to my head and say, what's going to happen? I would expect that a few of them will stick around for the adherence to these are the people who believed that gold was the only thing you should really invest in. He was a congressperson, a senator, he's gone now, Ron Paul. He said, if you don't dig it out of the ground, it's not worth anything. And that's why the world's largest companies are digital companies, like Amazon and Google and Facebook. And they don't dig anything out of the ground, folks. They all use computers. So stay tuned, dear students, and we'll see what happens with cryptocurrencies. But you can pretty much be assured that yours truly will not be speculating with these things. And you know what? Good luck. Good luck to you if you do. Good luck. I wish you a lot of good luck because you're going to need it. You're going to have to decide when it is that you can buy low and decide when it is you can sell high. You have to be right twice, multiple times. Good luck. Okay, slide number 29, my apologies. Slide 29. Starting a business, folks, this, all right, so we started with, you know, we just had something very downbeat. Let's look at something upbeat. The most prosperous investment that anyone can make is starting a business. It is the ultimate investment, to steal from other marketers. It's also one of the most risky investments anyone can make. You've probably heard the statistics. 50% of businesses fail in the first year. 80% of all businesses fail in the first 5 years. And 100% of businesses fail in the first 15, 25,000 years. Folks, the truth is no one knows the failure rate of small businesses because no one, not even the IRS, and that's their job, knows how many small businesses there are, because many of them go into business however they start and never really make it and then disappear, and then some of them stay and they never really report their earnings. But the truth is that many small business owners will often fail two or three times until they succeed. Exactly. So it's not an easy thing to do, and the time to do it is when you're young. Right, before you've got the spouse and the kids and the car payments and the rent or mortgage and the orthodontia and the veterinarian bills and the trash and the water and the sewer and the cell phones. Yeah, before you've dug into the benevolent machine. But do you have to go it alone? Oh, no. On slide 30, we see that there are tremendous resources available to help you. Why? Because we want you to succeed. We, meaning everybody at Southwestern and the Small Business Development Center, which is at our National City campus, but we also mean the society. Why? Because small business is the backbone of our economy. We hear all about the big corporations, but it's the small businesses that make up far more of the economy. And they are the ones that create the jobs and start small businesses that someday become large businesses. And so here are just a few of the tremendous resources out there. You really need to get involved with SCORE. SCORE is a phenomenal organization. It used to stand for Service Corps of Retired Executives, but now they just call themselves SCORE. And they are so cool because they're going to try to scare you. They're going to say, ooh, you're going to fail. Ooh, you shouldn't do this. Ooh, what do you think you are? And then, you know, half the people will leave, and then they'll say, okay, let's get started. You know, they're going to try to scare you first, and then they're going to say, okay, we'll help you. I mean, they do. I mean, that's their job. They realize that it's not for everybody. Kiva is a pretty cool organization that is a worldwide peer-to-peer lending organization, but it's mostly for outside the United States, but there's some inside the United States too. And then Acción San Diego is a small business organization that helps locals. That's very useful. But by far the best place, in my humble opinion, if I do say so myself, is the Small Business Development Center that's based at our National City campus. It's for South San Diego and Imperial Valley, if you can believe that. It's sponsored by the federal government, but they ask local organizations such as community colleges. The one in North County is up at MiraCosta, I think. Yeah, I think it's at MiraCosta or Palomar. But the San Diego, South San Diego, is based at National City, and they have tremendous seminars and people who can help you. I've gone to them. I love them. So you might see me there. So check it out, because as we said, we want you to succeed. We don't want you to fail, but you know, that's what happens. Sometimes small business people, they fail at a large rate until they succeed. It's the old saying, success means getting up just one more time, then you fall down. Cool. Slide 31. Oh, yeah. After all this, did we mention scams? Have you heard or seen ads like these? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You, too, can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide-open real estate foreclosure market. Just take our guaranteed surefire 3-day real estate investment seminar for only $2,995 that will pay for itself in just 1 month. month, you will be on your way toward riches beyond your wildest dreams. Now, don't worry, folks, about putting this on your credit card, because I know you're going to be able to pay this off, your credit, that whole $3,000 in 2 months. You are going to be awesome. And when that doesn't work, then we have the 5-day, $9,995 surefire can't lose system, and when that doesn't work, we mortgage your house, and then we send you for the $25,000 2-week in Hawaii. And I know you folks have something in your garage that you paid $3,000 that you're not using for. So these people, folks. These people are sharks. Stay away if it sounds too good. You think I could make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? Yeah. So stay away. Take Business 123, Introduction to Investments, and you'll learn more about what constitutes a real investment. Slide 32, the bottom lines. Buy a house, make it your home. It should reward you well over the long term, assuming that's where you want to live, both personally and financially. Learn the ropes regarding being a landlord, possibly working for a property manager. Don't overextend yourself with too many properties, especially when times are raging and credit is easy to get to. That's the dangerous part of real estate investing. Stay away from precious metals and gems and art and other collectibles as an investment, unless you really love it as a hobby first. I mean, if it gives you joy to own Beanie Babies or comic books or art, that, you know, that's what I like about art, is that it brings you joy. I don't think it's ever going to make me a whole lot of money, and as I told you, I would have crashed and burned with the one I was thinking of buying. Cryptocurrencies, folks, are tulip bulbs, really. They're just worthless pieces of digital information that people are passing around. And, you know, there are a few will probably stick around, but for the most part, you know, they're not investments. They're speculations. Dream, think, plan about what kind of business you would offer to the world. Maybe someday, yes. We wish you the best of success and luck in all your investments. And if these few chapters have piqued your interest, please consider taking Business 123 Introduction to Investments. And, of course, they're on wonderprofessor.com for free. You don't have to take the class to get the material. Of course, you won't get any college credit. But the world of investments needs new professionals. There's no doubt about that. And then over the next 15 to 20 years, many people who are ready to retire are going to retire or die. And we need bilingual, we need minorities, we need more women, we need ex-military. Hope to see you in Business 123, Introduction to Investments. And we are ready, dear students, for our last chapter, the final chapter of Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. And life, and that is retirement and estate planning. See you in Chapter 14, Retirement Planning and Estate Planning. Best of luck and success to you all, dear students.